welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is version 8.0.1.1 IBM Business Process Manager Advanced Installation in an Isolated Environment with DB2. Today's presenter is Daniel Eichholt. Daniel is an installation subject matter expert. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Daniel. You may begin.
Thank you, David. Go ahead to slide one. So the agenda for today is to walk through a installation of BPM 8.0.1.1 in a isolated environment. I'd like to talk also about our information center installation configuration process that removes a lot of the if-then-else type direction that was in previous documentation for installation. So this is a presentation of a silent install with DB2. It's showing how to download the files, extract, and install, and configure. I go through the process of creating databases and profiles and the deployment environment. Slide three. So what I mean by isolated is a system that is firewalled off from the internet. Our installation manager has a capability of grabbing updates from the internet, but when you're actually not connected to the internet, either with a proxy or directly, then you may experience a hang if you try to do the update and it can't get there. Actually, it's not really hanging. It's timing out, waiting for the network session to close. So you'll see a delay, but it's often described as a hang. To get around that, you basically turn off that feature, but you proactively build or download all of the software into a transfer environment. So I'll show you how to create an NFS server, export the files as slash software. I'm using several environment variables in my examples to keep lines short. And so you can see this example here. I'm exporting S as software and T as temp. To actually create a NFS share, you can echo the path that you want to share into Etsy exports, and then just execute service NFS reload, export FS as on other operating systems. There's NFS examples all over the place. We have one in our GPFS administration programming reference. Slide four. Again, the outline is we'll download and extract files, transfer, prepare the operating system for the installation. And since I'm giving the commands, I wanted to point out that the accept licenses means that you read the installation license agreements. I emphasize that in the documentation. I just want to make sure I emphasize it here. Missed a line feed here. Set up the users and database binaries. Install the BPM and configure process center and process server. Slide five. So from Passport Advantage, you would download these part numbers in the parentheses here. If you search for Business Process Manager, you'll find with your operating system, this process will work as well. So if you have a Linux on Z, you could find the set of part numbers to download from Passport Advantage. Passport Advantage is the repository for downloading software, and you'll be able to also search through that. I mean, they'll have a tree where you can select your operating system. There's for large companies, it's somewhat of a problem, so I include it here. You'll have every product listed in some cases, so it's kind of hard to navigate sometimes. I'm also recommending the latest fix packs for all of the install. Of course, I'm working in support, and we see there's fix releases, fix pack releases that have several APARs fixed. And so in order to not run into those, I always recommend using the latest. In DB2, there was a defect that makes it very valuable to actually install the latest fix pack. Let's just put it that way. Slide 6, please. In the download of the fix packs, we have a couple of different methods. HTTP transfer and download manager. Those are great, but if you don't have a browser on the target system where you're downloading to, and you're looking at a command line or just having shell access, then from another system, you can browse through the Info Center, Fix Central, to find the fix pack and select the option of bulk FTP download, and it'll present you with a URL that you can copy and paste into another shell session to do wget. Wget is typically found on Linux, but you can also download it. It's open source. Or just do a yum install wget. And since some of the fix pack, the bulk download creates a path for you to download from that persists for a short time that you can use. So you can send that link to another system to do the download, but they will build symbolic links in that directory. So you need to send the argument, as it shows here, follow FTP and return symlinks. So what I'm showing with minus I list is that if you have several fix packs to download, one way to do it is to just build up a list, and you cut and paste either like I show here with echo and just redirect it to a list file, or you can just edit the file, or you can do several wgets, whatever saves you time and gets you the complete list. So again, this is just a step that if you don't have the latest browser or your transfer system is also isolated, then you can use this method to transfer the files. Oftentimes, I've heard people complain about the delay times of downloading, and what they were doing is downloading to their laptop and then doing transfers to the system. So that sometimes it was going through VPN and slow links. Slide 7, please. What I'm showing here is just the way to do a Linux install. But the interactive configuration guide can direct you for specific steps on different operating systems. And what I'm showing here is the Info Center link for that top level. So you select interactive installation and configuration guide or search for it. Slide 8. So what you'll be presented with is a select list or radio buttons. And you select which product you want to install. And in this case, I select Advanced. Slide 9. And again, Linux. I select a non-root install, network deployment topology. And each step along the way has a link for help me decide. Slide 10. I select custom silent install and process center and process server. 11. I like to install my own database, and in this case, I select a DB2. 12, In this case, I wanted to show with creating deployment environment separately, managed profiles, and WSAdmin for doing everything from the command line. However, the profile management tool is the often the preferred method because it gives you a decision tree that also allows you to select and test steps along the way. Most of you working with Windows will be very familiar with that. And also the Deployment Manager wizard or the Administrative Console are both good options as well. So after you've made all your choices, you select the Generate Your Instructions, and you'll see a summary on page 13. It'll just tell you what you've selected, 14, and it'll give you the contents and a procedure that has all of these contents in them. Preparing to install the product, what you need to do, the operating system to configure it, and going through the installation, configuring the environment, slide 15. So if you've transferred all of the files over for your system where you're doing your transfers from, slash software, say you've downloaded all the fixed packs using wget, you need to extract the files. The way I like to do it, and it, there's really no guidance, I think, in the installation of these. It's just fairly obvious to everyone, you know, you have a zip file, you need to unzip it. I think it does actually in the README files tell you how to do this, but I name all of the directories, or I extract all of the fixed pack files and iFixes and product files, keeping the name of the file .zip. So in this case, I'm just going to go through this little snippet of the shell script. I list all of the zip files, and so I say for Z in the result of ls minus r star zip, which will ls all the zips will give a list of the zip files, and for each of those files I extract the directory name, just stripping out with sed the .zip at the end, and making a directory with the name of the parent, or the prefix, I guess. And if that succeeds, I create the directory. I change to the directory, and then unzip the file and go back and grab the next one. So this was a shorthand I use in tech notes to get the exact listing of the files that I want to go off and do the next step. And I found that this is useful in my case when I'm working in my lab. I just do the same process. 16. And bringing in all of the iFixes, we're not really recommending that. But if you wanting to, or you having to maintain a long list of iFixes with a release, it's adding a new iFix to a pool of existing iFixes and building a system from zero, from what I'm showing in this next slides here. It's a there's often six packs that supersede other APARs or iFixes that will bundle other iFixes together. So it's unlike a normal fixed pack. A fixed pack will do all of this for you already, but if you're having interim fixes, you'll probably want to do something like this. There's a supersede line in the fixed directory or the fixed file that you can search in this little shell or set of commands. I'll just walk through this line by line. What I'm doing is building a repository config file for all the iFixes. So I want to look at the first two lines of the repository. So I echo layout policy. These are just a couple of keywords at the top of the file. So I'm creating repository.config. And then for each iFix, I check for superseded APARs. I set the directories of a list of all of the iFix directories. This is after I've unpacked them. And so if the directory is blank or empty, I skip and set E to superseded. I've searched for superseded in the directory. I think I'm going to have a little bit of trouble actually going through this line by line. I think it'll be a little bit too long here. I go back to this E line here. I'm taking the superseded line out of an iFix file and then replacing stripping out just the APAR with the sed command. So I'm looking just for the APAR, and what I'm getting is all of the setting E to the list of APARs that are in the superseded list. And then I exclude those APARs or iFixes from the final list. So if you forgive me a little bit for going along in this, I'll review kind of what happened here. If you have 10 iFix files that you've downloaded and you notice when you're building up a new environment that, we have 6 more APARs, you think that, okay, you read through the release and you say, well, this is something I may run into, and you want to bring those into the mix as well. But I seldom read it through everything in the details to see, this one supersedes that one, so I need to take that one out of the list. This will do that automatically for you. So even though you have in your repository or your downloaded directory or in / software, and you want to bring in all of the latest iFixes, this will strip out and exclude the iFixes that are superseded. The repository config is being built specifically for that group of iFixes. If you have any questions on this one, just note it, and then I'll open it up for questions at the end of this. So this last section for L and DIRS is building that list of APARs or list of iFixes for the final set. 17. So preparing the host, we still run into problems where we see out-of-memory error messages when you actually do a add node. There's several files that get opened up all at once. So making sure that you have the right configuration for these things are critical to your success. You'll run into problems if you don't. Especially the ulimit for number of open file descriptors. Now, I think the default for Linux is 2000, AIX is 2000 anyway. I also show here turning off the firewall, which is something that folks run into if you're doing a user install, like I'm showing here. So the Information Center has changed in different releases. So these are actually in the instructions for ulimit. Normal practice is to edit the limits conf file, syscontrol conf, se linux, if you want to disable the firewall. There is a tech note that shows ports that you that we're using, so that you could actually be very specific. If you're in a really tight controlled environment, using the local firewall, you'll not want to do this disable, but you'll have to follow that techno to enable which ports and control the ports that we're using. There is a port definition file that you can, a property file that you can use to set which ports are being built when you do the managed profiles. So instead of having to reboot, you can use sysctl p and do ulimit and set if you're doing this as root. I mean, you have to, you have to be root in order to make these changes. And this command, ulimit minus s, will only work if you are root and or if you're a user, but root has set your limit to be this high, available limit to be this high. Echoing 0 into SELinux enforce is also a way to immediately change the firewall. Normally, that's something that you have to review with your security, and it's not something I'm recommending. It's just a practice that I use when I do my installs. Corn Shell is a requirement that's documented. I'm not 100% certain that it's needed, but I always install Corn Shell. Just that's my habit. There may be some shell commands that are calling out KSH still. The bash shell will play like it's Corn Shell too, so that may not be strictly enforced, but it's easy to install. 18. A DB2 install, I'm expecting that many customers will have their DBA do the install. So if you're staging this as a test to see how things work to do an install, you can do this as well. And it's just a few commands that you run, and you have a DB2 instance. In this case, I'm doing Advanced Enterprise Server Edition. That's the AESE. That'll change depending on which version you're doing the install for. And I set the path to the default. Apply the fix pack, in this case fix pack 2, and run the fix pack install. 19. And I set up databases, adding the group and users, also adding a user for the application, which is here as $U. I set that up in a tech note. I kind of pasted that. I show it here, but in the tech note that I'm working on, I set $U to the BPM 8011 user, which I like to name as the user ID of, based on the version that I'm installing. Of course, these usernames are somewhat traditional with DB2. There's a fence user for stored procedures and other reasons why they want to fence that specific user off from an application user ID. And the DB2 database administrator, DB2 DAS. So this is just a quick shell as root. You need to set up users, and this is a way to do that. I'm setting the password to admin by just doing an echo to password with standard user or standard input and setting the user, creating the database administrative server and the instance. So in this case, I'm using the application user ID, which I said earlier is BPM 8011, and I'm just creating a database instance with that same user. There's probably good arguments for not doing this way. Segregating the database from the application is typical. And this is, database administrators would probably argue with me this is probably not the right practice to do. So I just stated it straight out that I'm not a trained licensed DBA, so I just use it as a quick way to replicate customer problems. The most often we see the database is completely isolated from the application on a remote system, sometimes depending on the network. Slide 20. The creation of the databases here isn't necessary. The shell scripts you can send as argument to create these databases as well. I just preferred to do them all at once so I can do some testing. So in this case, I picked all of the database names from the Red Book for production topologies and just ripped through each one of them as root. I'm almost always either doing it from command line as root or running a shell script as root to do my installs. I'm showing you here su-lc, which is L means to execute the user's profile, and C is to send this command. And you see at the end of the command, end of the line right before done, is the $U, so that's the application user ID or the database instance owner. And so I just walk through each one of these and set them all to the same page size. There's also a couple of other alters that could fit here as far as log size and one other parameter that escapes me right now. Again, this is just my way of doing things. It could be also done through the normal shell scripts with the create database option. 21. If you are using a remote database or you've just created these databases like this and you want to test the water before you jump to the next step, and you have IID, which is IBM Integration Designer, or older products, WID, Webster Integration Designer, there is a perspective for database debug and database development. Easy to create a new connection and test the connection. So after you test the connection, you can create tables and do some of the operations that may fail if the DBA didn't set the right permissions for you. It's just a nice way to test the water before you go to the next step. We sometimes get problems reported at this step. So this is a real nice, easy graphical way to do it if you're not familiar with DB2 or any other of the databases that we support, and you're not able to actually log into the machine, or you need to send a request to the DBA to set up everything for you. This is a good way to just test the connectivity. From Linux, you can install IID and then bring it up if you have the GUI, or you can use it from your laptop under Windows. I believe there's also other Eclipse products out there that will do the same thing that's freely available. Our DB2 tool also has something very similar to this. Slide 22. I was showing you earlier some commands that you could create as a shell script. If you cut and paste those from a document, or you have an email or something else in Windows and you send it over to your Linux box, most of you, anyone that's done this before, are familiar with Unix. You VI a file and you can see the up caret M, which is carriage return under Windows. So the latest Vim on that's the default VI on Linux is hiding all that from you, which I've actually run into this even after knowing that that just it was natural to always just do a global replace of all the controller or carriage return characters when you edit files from DOS. So a couple of ways to do this. Most folks that have run into this are very natural. Just pick up the DOS to UNIX command, and that does this edit for you. If you're not familiar with that, VI-B will show this. So the default it used to be just it would always show this. Now with the later Linuxes, it'll hide that from you. So use VI-B. Then you can do the substitute. Or another way to look at it is you can do octal dump XC, which will show you the hex and characters, so you can remove that. The DOS to UNIX command is basically doing the same thing here as the sed line. I'm just replacing all the control R with nothing. So redirecting it from the file into a new file. So you'll see things like command not found errors. That's typically it, and you can get stuck here for a while, or I have. 23. So back onto our product installation. I put everything into /software. IM. There's a download for installation manager that's later than what's packaged in our products, and there's always advantages to using the latest IM. The installation manager recently 6.2 added character sets for nationalization. So that this is actually one case where it might not be advantageous to go to the latest version because of some of the browsers are not having all the languages supported. So even though in the past you may have lang variables set to a different language, all of a sudden your X window font server might not support what you've set. So in the past, you would fire up Installation Manager, and even though your lang variable was set to something, it would bring up a English Installation Manager. So Installation Manager in the past would not really honor the lang variables that you have set. I'm sorry, I'm deviating a little bit from the slide here, but some important information. I still argue that it's always best to use the latest product versions, but in this one particular case, if you're dealing with X Windows servers that don't have fonts that can support this, then you might run into problems with GUI. However, in this presentation, I'm just showing you command line, so you won't have a problem there. If you're using NFS remotely and your user on your local machine or this machine that you have mounted NFS on, I'll just illustrate really quickly. Host 1 is the NFS server. Host 2 is the client. Host 2, you mount the file exported from host 1. If you don't have in my case, on host 2, I created a user called BPM 8011. That user does not exist on the NFS server. So my NFS server won't recognize who this user is and may deny a lock. There's all sorts of configurations you can do with NFS in that case. But traditionally, if a export is there and they need to do a lock on a file, they'll promote that user to nobody, and the nobody will not have permission to do a lock. So in Installation Manager, it may just hang trying to get a lock. So one way around that is to not do any locking, or you can actually, in the mount command, say do local lock server. So it promotes that pass route to do the lock. So just echoing this into, in this case I'm showing it's a root installation manager, but the same path will exist, excluding the opt here. It would be IBM would be the user's path, or the directory in the user's home. So it would be the same config INI file that you can just echo this. Locking false into so that the installation manager won't attempt to gain a lock on each file when it's doing install. Another way around this is to make sure that there's using a user that has the appropriate authority on the NFS server as well, so there's no problem with doing lock promotions. In the procedure, we show how to do an encryption string. I didn't get into much detail here about this. I'll just gloss over this part of it because I didn't really continue with that thread. If you have any questions at the end, I may be able to take them or email me. Slide 24. In building the command lines to do installations from, I found it not intuitive to figure out what the right command line arguments are. So you can point installation manager at the repository and just generate a list. And this is a way to do that. So you can see what all of the product IDs are in the repository. And so you can use this as the resulting set as a way to generate the next command line. 25. So in my case, I like to do stages of installs. So I build with the lowest level and then stack it up. Literally, you can build the installation as an entire one shot. I just found it nicer to test the water as I go up. So in this case, I'm doing a IMCL, which is command line version of install, in my user's home or user's .bashrc file. I create an alias for IMCL, which is it's easily found in our documentation, but in the installation manager path, IBM, it's under at the same level as IBM IM, which is the GUI launcher. There's a subdirectory called tools, and then IMCL is there. So if you create an alias, it'll save you some typing. And here's the features for that are needed for supporting BPM, WebSphere ND in this particular case. And I'm showing setting to clean up the temporary files and set verbose logging property, setting a separate log file so that all the output also goes to this WAS silent install log. 26. After I get my WAS install, I do an upgrade to the latest fix pack. This FP6 will include some of the prerequisites. So I found it better, I think, for myself to not have to deinstall the fix packs, which will happen with Installation Manager automatically if you had built the installed everything and then tried to apply fix pack later fix packs. It'll often have to deinstall some of the iFixes that you install. So I just go to the latest, and then if my iFix list is superseded by this fix pack, it'll show right away. Again, I put everything into a logs directory with show verbose and then I can tail that log file as it's installing if I want to see what's going on. 27. So the fix pack or the SWG is the fix list for fix pack 6. I create a list of the fix packs that are requested in the BPM, and then apply those all in apply them as a list to the IMCL. I'm doing update and just, again, sending that to a log file. So at the end of this, I have WebSphere application server with all of the fix packs that are recommended for BPM 8011. And at this step, I could test WAS if I wanted to verify everything is working at that level. I wouldn't create a profile at this point, though. It could be okay. Slide 28, and then I install Business Process Manager, pretty much the same as earlier commands. A log that I can tail, tail minus F will show the updates as it's going. Slide 29. And again, with the required fix packs, one's critical for bootstrap command. I think I may have made a mistake here in this list. I'd have to go back to checking what I said earlier, but if you did this and they were something superseded, it would tell you. So it's safe. And there probably will be other iFixes, so you can add that to this list as well. We don't recommend to install all iFixes. It's something you have to evaluate. And at this step, there's no profile yet created, so some of the iFixes will have edits to some careful steps that you need to take care of. I'm not sure if that was in any of these cases, but every iFix really should be evaluated whether it's appropriate for your environment or not. It's not like a fix pack. 30. That said, I still recommend in my environment for my testing, most of the time I'm building it to the latest. So in this case, I'm applying the fix pack 8011 as command line. And same steps, basically. 31. Integration Designer can also be installed with command line on Linux. And same basic steps could be followed as far as all of the iFixes for that. Here I'm just showing ID and the fix pack for 8011. I may be skipping the test environments with this. So there may be more steps to do, but I just wanted to throw this in as I did show the IID using for showing the database connections. There's more, much more useful things to do with IID than that. And it's very good to have it also on the server for a quick test. 32. So the DB design generator isn't really needed with the configuration step. So there's another step that'll take care of all of this for you. So I'll mention that more towards the end. But it'll do customization of those scripts that you need to execute to build a database. So there's a help screen that will generate. Of course, there's IBM Education Assistance. I think there's presentations on DB Designer. And it's, I think, well documented in the Incident Center as well. You can edit a design file. I found that it has to be named .design or db.dbdesign, so that extension is necessary. You can validate an edited version of your design file, and you can generate the scripts from that file. 33. So one thing I want to mention about the design file is that they're different for each one, Process Center and Process Server. So you don't want to use the same design file for both. They have different databases that they'll use. So here's the two profile paths or templates that I'm using to create the profiles with, Process Server Advanced and Process Center Advanced 34. And some examples of managed profiles. Install root is up to you as if you're doing a user install. I've been using BPM as the root there. Since it's underneath the user ID, my user ID I create is /u/ BPM 801, so it's already kind of documented, self-documenting with the path and the username. So it could be, and I think by default, WebSphere, or it's up to you how you want to lay that out when you do the install of the product. The username here is BPM admin, and BPM secret just as the example I picked up here. Of course, that would change. In my case, it would be instead of BPM admin, it would be BPM 801.1. 35, just creating the managed profile for Process Center, and the add node command would require starting the dmanager profile before doing add node. Add node is a step that fails if you have not enough file descriptors set up, or you've set up your networking such that it is using a local home. If you have two different users or two different systems, some people get in trouble with having things installed in the profile as host name local home, which when it tries to connect to the other server, it sends its return address as local home and it won't connect back because it's trying to connect back to itself. I can explain more of that in the question and answer session. 36. Once you've built, and I think I've kind of glossed over the managed profile and profile creation step a little bit here. I only showed one instance of it, but they're rarely close to the same in the instructions. You'll see the details when you go through the installation manager. Info Center and do the configuration. It will show you next steps in there and give you details. But there are slight modifications to those both. You start the profile for DManager, add node, start the profile for the custom, or add the node to the DManager, and at this step, now you can create the deployment environment using wsadmin command, setting it to the right ports for the SOAP port, for the DManager, and sending it the design file. The design file will contain all of the arguments for JDBC driver paths, and all of the traditionally, you would have to send a lot of commands about the database properties, and that this is a way to just envelope everything into a single file for DB design and make the command line simpler here. 37, and then this is showing generate the environment. I think I maybe did two scripts of the same here. But I won't flip back. Slide 38. Before you start up the environment, you'll need to bootstrap. And this is just showing the bootstrap command. This will take some time to run, depending on the performance of the database. 39. So I think I ran through some of the last steps very quickly. Beg your forgiveness for that. But I think I showed the interactive installation configuration guide through our Info Center, showing you after downloading the packs and some tips on how to download fixed packs. transferring the files from a transfer point to the isolated host. So do some tips on creating database, installing the stages. Installing in stages it can avoid some known defects and also give you the opportunity to add fixed packs at different levels that may have been released or recommended. If you need to do that, it's often easier to add just to WAS before you add to VPM or at different steps along the way. If you're installing a later fix pack than you have done before, you might be able to skip some of these steps with installing iFixes that are included in the later fix pack. I hope I showed you some useful design or useful tips. Running DB design, I think I skipped over the actual creation of or executing the scripts that are created from DB design. Those will be documented actually in a tech note that I'm writing, but they're also documented in other places as well. But it's generally there's a shell script that shows you how to configure and create the tables, the database, and it's pretty clear in just paging through the shell scripts that DB Design Generator creates what the command line arguments are. They're basically sending the user for connecting to the database and whether or not you want to create the database. It'll prompt you then for the password and then execute the SQL. In the Red Hat, in the Red Book, for production topologies, it goes through that very those very steps very very well, and gives you some table counts to execute after each step, and it'll give you some checkpoints. Also with the profile creations, and I hope that you find it useful the command lines create the deployment environments. 40? I think I'll pass it back to you at this point, David. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Daniel, for a great presentation.
Thank you.
On slide 40, there are some additional WebSphere product resources that we hope you'll find useful. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us, let us know how we can make this program better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
At this time, there are no questions.
Thank you. I do see a couple of questions in the group chat. The first one, Daniel, can we specify node names while using create deployment env def command?
On the profiles, node names are created with the profile management. I believe there's WS admin commands that will create the nodes as well. I have to admit, I don't really know. I think I'd have to follow up with an email. If maybe you can give more details about which node you would be creating. I'm not really sure I can answer the question.
I did put up the first slide, which has your email address on it.
Yes.
This person could send you an email with more details, and then you would be able to respond.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
thank you.
If you need an immediate response, you can also create a PMR and put my name on it as well. I'll address those.
Okay, thanks. And then I see one other question. In case you configure PSADV profile, do you need to create an extra profile for WebSphere ESB, or is it included in the PSADV profile?
On ESB, I'm fairly certain that it's included with PS, unless something changed. I'm fairly certain that it does include the ESB.
Okay. Thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Daniel, for presenting today.
Thank you, David.